No, thank you. Sleepy. Just come back in an hour.
Need sleepy.
Please go away. Let me sleep for the love of God!
It's now time for the Billy C. Morning Show, part of the Billy C. Boxing Network. Interact with the show at BillyCBoxing.com.
And we're coming to you live from the Billy C. Studios in Lake George, New York. I'm Bill Caligiuri. It's time for the Billy C. Morning Show. Good morning, everybody. I'm glad to be part of your morning today. And, of course, we're glad you're part of ours. And I want to give a special shout-out to everyone watching us on Fight TV. We're glad to be part of Fight TV's programming. And the best part is you should get the Fight TV app so you can watch our show and other shows on your handheld. It's real easy. Just go to Fight, that's F-I-T-E, that's fight.tv/BillyC, and download the app right now for free and watch us at your leisure. Fight TV. We're happy to be part of that. Today's show is being brought to us in part by Sal's Neighborhood Pizzeria and Italian Restaurant, located on St. Simon's Island in Georgia. Wish I was there right now. Check out the website, www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com, or give my man a call, 912-268-2328, 912-268-2328. And don't forget, if you're heading south on I-95, don't forget, you can stop by and enjoy a great meal at Sal's. Literally a 15-minute detour off of I-95. Easy on, easy off. And that's including stopping for a light or two. If you run the red light, you'll get there even quicker. Trust me, it'll be a regular stop for you. Just give it a shot. For the address and other information, visit the website, www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com. Today's show is also being brought to us in part by FanFire. Check it out, or that should be Fire Fan. Yeah. FireFan.com/BillyCBoxing. Best way to get the app. It's a fantasy game like you've never seen. It's all sports, and you can play different things other than what you used to. Check it out and see what I'm talking about. Best way to go is visit our website, BillyCBoxing.com. Click on the Fire Fan banner, which is right there on the left-hand side. And don't forget, if you use the banner that we have on BillyCBoxing.com, you can download the app for free forever and get a chance to win money. Listen, you're not going to be able to get it for free and win money unless you go to our website and click the banner for FireFan. Find out what I'm talking about. And finally, today's show is being brought to us in part by my book, Tom Mono, From Bondage to Baddest Man on the Planet, is available right now where all good books are sold. And you can literally get a copy of it right now by visiting BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com. Find out why we got a 5-star rating across the board. And this is a great book for Black History Month. That's right. Tom Mono was a slave that was forced into fighting. He ended up fighting for his freedom and actually became the baddest man on the planet and was robbed. Find out why this guy and changing the way history is written is so important to me. Tom Mono, From Bondage to Baddest Man on the Planet, is a great read, quick read, and I urge you to get a couple of copies right now. Now, if you're looking to get a signed copy, visit our website, www.billycboxing.com, and go into the book club section. We had some fights this weekend, which we'll talk about here in a couple of minutes. One of my issues today is I couldn't help but watch the fight card out of Miami, Oklahoma, this past weekend on Showtime. And I got some thoughts on smaller commissions and, you know, are they really safe for the fighters? I know a lot of promoters, including myself, like to go to smaller commissions because of the ease of putting on an event, and the overall expense is a lot less. But are the fighters getting what the promoters are not paying for? We'll talk about that in a little bit. Also, we got some updates on Manny Pacquiao and some other news, including the junior middleweight matchup between Demetrius Boo Boo Andrade and Jack Colquay. But today's topic, my main topic today, Anyway, is Roy Jones Jr., you know, in case y'all forgot, you know, that was a song by Roy. He's fighting this Friday against Bobby Gunn for some trinket. You know, Roy Jones Jr. was a great fighter. First ballot Hall of Famer, no doubt. But the sad part is the fact that he's been hanging on so long. A lot of young fans that are getting into the sport now never got to see Roy Jones in his prime the way I did. And when I say Roy Jones Jr. was one of the greatest fighters of all time, a lot of young fans today could be watching him and saying, what the hell are you talking about? He's garbage. He's an old man. He's this, he's that. Because he has turned into an old man, and he has turned into a garbage fighter. He has no business fighting anymore. He should hang up the gloves. Not only that, he should hang up the microphone. It's time for Roy Jones Jr. maybe to go in a trainer role or just focus on his promotional company. I don't know. But boxing definitely should be something that he should be getting out of. Joining me right now, a guy who can relate to this. He made a comeback after over 25 years of woulda, coulda, shoulda. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sal Rocky Senecolo. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, Billy C. How's it going, pal?
Oh, not too bad. We got about 15 inches of snow last night.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Holy smoke.
Yeah, you know, so...
I wish you could send some of that down south.
Oh, I wish I could too, Sal. Trust me. I wish I could send everything that's in my driveway right now to you. But nonetheless, you know, we got some fight results I'll talk about here in a minute. But Roy Jones Jr., Sal, you know, we all remember him busting onto the scene and then dominating the scene and creating some history, rewriting history along the way. And this is a guy that just can't seem to let go. And you know, for a lot of reasons, I'm not sure why. You know, there was rumor that financially he needed money, but he's fighting these fights that are clearly can't be making him money. This weekend he's fighting, or Friday night he's fighting Bobby Gunn, who is just a tough journeyman kind of a guy, never really was a world title holder, really nice guy. I'm good friends with Bobby. But they're fighting, and not only are they fighting, but they're fighting on a pay-per-view. What's your thoughts on this? I mean, when do you say when?
Well, you know, that's something that every fighter has to look in the mirror and realize, you know, is it over? And, you know, it's hard to walk away from, Bill. And I don't want to get into analogies, but I will tell you this. Look at it like this. For years, you're trained, you're a racing Ferrari. You get up, you train every day. You spar, you prepare for fights. This is your life, this is what you do. And you're sparring 30 rounds a week. You're running, you're training, you're getting up for the emotional high of the fight. You're going in there, you fight, you train, you get back in the ring, you do this, you do that. And then all of a sudden, boom, it stops. It's dead stop, boom. What do you do? How do fighters get involved with other things? Because now all the emotion, all of the routine, all of the things, all of a sudden came to a halt. And can you find something that could get you motivated to get up every day to get on with life and to find a new challenge? Fortunately for me, that's what I've done. But it's hard. But it was still like a monkey on my back, and that's why I wanted to go back into the ring. And you know what? If I didn't tear that rotator cuff, I probably would still be fighting today, because there's just something about it that is unequaled in some of the phases of life that we try to find suitable, that we can venture into. So it's hard to walk away. It really is. And you got to look in the mirror. And you got to realize it's over. You got to realize, okay, this isn't good for my health anymore. You got to realize it's done. And you got to pick up something that's going to gain your interest, that you're going to excel in. And that's what I've done. I've been fortunate enough, because I've taken all my emotion, all my training. I'm still the fighter inside. I just have a different canvas I painted on. My arena, my ring is just different. I've been able to make that transition. But for a lot of other fighters, they're not. And they hold on.
Well, it's like that for any sport. When you're an athlete,
true.
You know, you get out of that routine and life goes on. You go into another phase. And with Roy Jones Jr., you know, he accomplished so much.
Yes, he did. And this He's a master.
And this is where I'm always saying that boxing needs boxing people. So a guy like Roy Jones Jr. would be way better off, you know, staying involved, because I totally get it. You know, what do? You got that juice. You're a fighter inside, blah, blah, blah. So he would be way better serving the sport and himself by being involved at other parts of the business. Like I know he's a promoter, but how active does he promote? I know he trains a little bit, but how active does he train? You know, here's a guy where he should be focusing his time on promotion and training and signing fighters and feeling it like that, rather than getting in the ring. Because let's face it, this isn't the same Roy Jones Jr., Sal. This is a shell of Roy Jones Jr., and the level of opposition that he's fighting, you know, is indicative of how low he's dropped. You know, so it comes a point when, what's he doing it for? You know, he could get hit. I mean, Bobby Gunn is no world beater, but Bobby Gunn can still put somebody's lights out. And Roy Jones Jr., at his age, and by the way, Bobby Gunn is no spring chicken either. He's in his 40s. The bottom line is, you know, he could get seriously hurt. He's got nothing to prove in the ring. You know, he needs to hang him up. I mean, you know, this fight is a joke. And what's even more of a joke is, who the hell, who's going to pay for this? I mean, who's going to actually, I don't care if it's $1.99. Who's going to pay to watch Roy Jones Jr. fight Bobby Gunn? And the rest of the card is not that great either. I mean, I, you know, again, we're fleecing the fan. I'm just, you know, aside from his family, who's going to pay for this?
I know. It's crazy.
I mean, it's a joke.
I'm not interested in seeing it. I really don't care.
You know, the sad thing is, I might have to friggin' pay for it just to be able to talk about it. And
well,
I don't even want to do it.
I mean, I'm going to see it, of course. That's what I'm talking about.
I just don't understand. The guy's got nothing left to prove. You know, you can twist it and sell it and try to tell me in every which way how it's going to be a competitive fight. And I'll tell you how it's going to be. You know, Bobby Gunn is going to chase him down. He'll look for that one punch knockout. Roy is going to try to outbox him, and the fight's going to end, from a flurry and the referee waving it off. I don't know. I can't see it being.
I think you just gave the whole fight synopsis. I can see that happening.
I mean, that's the way it is. Hey, quick note. I just want to give everybody that was part of the Billy C. Challenge. We had already sent the winner of December his prize. James Keister, congratulations on that. And everyone else that was waiting for prizes, our year-end winner, Blakely Berger, and our two prizes that we sent out for two of the challengers who'd never missed a week this year, Joel and Alex T., all the prizes have been shipped out, so be looking in your mail for that. So thanks for participating with the Billy C. Challenge, and I just wanted to give everyone a heads up that all of that has been shipped out. But some fights this weekend, Sal. On Showtime Friday night, Ivan the Beast Baranicek, Baranicek is the way I pronounce it. I think they were calling it something else on the broadcast. He improved to 14-0 with 10 knockouts when he won a 10-round decision over Abel Ramos, who drops to 17-2-2 at the Buffalo Run Casino in Miami, Oklahoma. This was a great fight. I told everyone that this fight would be the best one of the week. A lot of people weren't giving Ramos much of a chance. As a matter of fact, we got an email from our man Jesse asking me if I thought it was a real fight, and I said, well, you know, Abel Ramos is actually the toughest guy that the Beast has faced, and I tell you what an exciting fight. I mean, both fighters hit the canvas a couple of times in this fight. It went the distance, and at the end, the Beast won 97-92, 99-91, 97-93, all in favor of Ivan the Beast Baranicek. very entertaining fight. Also, Joseph Mack Williams improved to 11-0 with 7 knockouts when he won an 8-round majority decision over Lennon Castillo, who loses for the first time in his career, 15-1-1. Mack Williams outworked Castillo from the beginning. The way the judges scored it, 78-74, 77-75, and one had it even, 76-76. And in the third fight of the night, John Fernandez improved to 11-0 with 9 knockouts when he scored a third-round stoppage over Ernesto Garza, who loses for the second time in his career. He drops to 7-2 with 4 knockouts. Garza was in some serious trouble and hit the deck in the first round and then got the stoppage in the third at 1 minute and 39 seconds. Felt that the fight was stopped too soon. My quick comments on this card, Sal, is this. You know, when a promoter goes and decides to put on an event and they pick a commission or they pick a state to do it in, you know, we have our major states with very strong and, strict commissions. You know, New York, New Jersey, California, Nevada, all very strict and have rules that the fighters have to follow. And then we have some other commissions that are not so strict. Well, I think what we saw in this fight right on our television sets was the results of a smaller, weaker commission. Now, the first confusing thing is the referee, Mr. Ritter, has a twin brother who's a judge. And they were alternating. One time one's judging and the other time. So they all look like the same guy in there. If they weren't wearing different color shirts, we wouldn't know who the hell is who. You know, right. And, you know, it saves a promoter money for not having these officials ringside. But my question is you know, how do you switch gears from being the third man in a ring, a referee, and then sitting behind and scoring a fight and then jumping back? I mean, it's got to be difficult, let alone, you know, tiresome. The other thing is you know, I look at things like, when a fighter gets in trouble, in that particular fight, the Fernandez against Garza fight, that fight should have been stopped earlier than it was. Garza was taking all kinds of shots, but here's the thing. You know, I wasn't ringside. I wasn't even in the ring, so maybe he didn't look as beat up as he did through TV. But after the fight, Sal, a guy that hit the deck, a guy that took the shots that this guy took, wasn't even being examined by a doctor. You know, we criticize the New York Commission for examining a guy, you know, overkill, but there has to be a happy medium. There should have been a doctor in that ring, at least giving this guy some kind of test or going through some kind of protocol for his safety. My point is although it may be better for a promoter to do an event in one of these smaller states or smaller commissions, but is it better for the fighter? And shouldn't we have, I mean, I think it's time to have some kind of across-the-board rules from commission to commission. You know, I hate to say it, but I was always anti a government-run boxing commission. But maybe it's time to get at least an overseeing commission and have all these commissions follow the same rules, Sal. The medical requirements, the protocol if a fighter gets battered, you know, all those things. And maybe we would have overall a better safety for the fighters. What's your thoughts?
Well, I think it would be an ideal situation if you had something like that. And, you know, there's jurisdictions, there's different communities, different areas where they try to promote a fight, and they do it haphazardly. They do it in a sense where, you know, you have to abide by some regulations, some rules, some mandated, state-regulated outline. I mean, you should have an ambulance there. You should have medics there. There's got to be a certified ringside doctor.
But all of that is minimum. I'm talking about, like, a protocol. What the biggest thing is the medical requirements from commission to commission. And to tell you the truth, you know, I know the complaints of the promoters, the expense and everything else, but if more fighters had to go through the requirements that you'd have to fight in the state of Nevada or New Jersey or New York or Chicago or California, then those fighters would actually, and the promoters, would actually have more opportunities to fight on other cards. What happens is you get these other commissions that don't require the medicals that the bigger commissions do, and then that fighter might be missing out on opportunities and ultimately paydays because the medicals aren't up to snuff for the bigger commissions. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, it's true. It's true. I'll tell you. Well, even when I was getting licensed, you know, to make my comeback, we had trouble with Georgia because Georgia had certain regulations and rules, and we put all my applications and my medical tests to the state of Florida, and they passed it with a smile right away.
You know, well, you know, yours was a unique case because, yeah, you know, I mean, a lot of commissions really frown, and no disrespect to you, but they really frown on, you know, giving boxing licenses to fighters that are over 40 years old. And in for the state of Florida, it's something that you went through, they require an additional test just for safety, which is good. But those additional tests that they require for a fighter 40 years and older are mandatory for states like New Jersey and Nevada and New York. You know, so, but all the tests, you know, the tests are great, but that's not really the most important thing. The most important thing is to have the right protocol followed by all of the people that are involved. You know, and that is, what do you do when a fighter gets knocked down? What do you do when a fighter is taken on, punishment? You know, it's one thing to say, oh, walk this way. No, walk the other way. No, do this, do that. You know, they're mixing that up to make sure that the fighter's got all his faculties together. But where's the ringside doctor? Like you suggest that, you know, they're all licensed and all of that. Great. But how come they're not checking the guy? Yeah, how come they're not checking him out? I don't know. You know, that particular fight, Garza, although he was seemed fine after the fight and was actually complaining that it was stopped, he took a hellacious beating. I mean, especially in that first round. That first round, I mean, nobody could have criticized Ritter for stopping that fight in that very first round, and he didn't. It went on for two more full rounds, so I don't know. But some other fights real quick, let's get through. I got an email. We got Dax Khan coming on in a little bit. A fight that you and I were just talking about, Robert Easter Jr. Defended his title over Luis Cruz to improve to 18-0 with 14 knockouts. Cruz drops to 22-4, went the distance. Cruz did get rocked and was in some serious trouble in the final round, but managed to stick it out. 119-106, 118-107, 117-108 with the way the three judges scored that one. I wasn't impressed with Robert Easter in this fight, Sal.
No, neither was I.
You know, I mean, he was given a layup. This is my problem. We talk about this all the time. This is my problem when a fighter gets a title and now we're supposed to still watch him develop as he's defending the title. What's your thoughts?
Well, exactly that. I mean, he, you know, they were showing some of his clips from his amateur fights during the fight in between rounds. And I thought his amateur fights, he looked more like a fighter than he did the other night. I wasn't impressed. He was off balance. He was awkward. He was lunging. And the other guy, Cruz, he was trying to land a haymaker, not working his way in, not cutting the ring off, not boxing, is slipping and moving and getting inside and delivering the punches. And Easter, well, I saw him throw a right hand. His right foot was in the air. I mean, that's your foot. You're supposed to bam, and you got to be sitting on that punch like that. And you know, I saw a lot of things that I thought, here he is trying to improve and do this and that. And he's already got the title.
Well, the exactly. I mean, you're supposed to prove
he's
and get
supposed
better.
To be, well, I know that's a go.
No, that's what I'm saying.
And you know what? And here he was. I mean, I had a record of 18-0 as well. And it was an 18 win. Tell you, times change.
Well, I mean, for a guy, I just can't stand it when a guy is on his way up. And I know the fighter's got to develop and get better and better.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't feed him a title, and then he's making these defenses against, you know, guys that they're slipping in so he can improve. I mean, he should have already did that work, you know.
But, exactly. When you're a champion and you supposedly earned, the right to call yourself a champion. Guess what?
That's
there's a
the key.
Obligation that comes with that.
That's the key. That's what you just said.
You're
what you just said.
You're a freaking world champion. What? Guess what, pal? Here's the number one ranked contender. You got to fight him in 6 months. Or
what you just said is what's not happening anymore. A fighter that climbs the ladder of the contenders and then becomes a champion earned the championship. Then he takes on all the other guys trying to earn their shot at a title. Instead, we get guys that get hand-fed a title, and then, oh, he's still developing. Oh, he's not ready for this guy. He's not ready for that guy. He's not ready. He's got a title. You know, how could you not be ready if you got a title? I don't know. You know, yeah, that's the problem when you give out titles. There's a surplus of titles. You know, we got titles. We got a dilution of titles. You know, and that's what you end up with. But anyway, in a shocking fight, in my mind, anyway, in the bantamweight division, Zanat Zakayanov upset and won the 118 WBA's version, 118 title over Rasheed Warren, who drops his first fight. Actually, it should be the second fight, right? He's 14-2 now. Zakayanov, 26-1. What a good fight. Warren knocked Zakayanov down twice in the first round, but Zakayanov came back in the third, and then it was just a tough fight after that. And at the end, it was a 12-round split decision. Two of the judges sorted for Zakayanov, 115, 111, 116, 110. And the third had it for Warren, 115, 111. What surprises me here is that the way the judges saw this fight did not really show that it was as close as it was. I thought even a draw or closer scores would have been more justified. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so, exactly. You know, it is what it is, and that's the whole thing. Who's scoring these fights? How the judges see it? That's another thing that should be regulated and tested. Who knows?
Exactly. Two other scores I wanted to get you real quick. Terrell Gashua improved to 20-0 with 9 knockouts when he scored a 10-round decision over Luis Hernandez, who drops to 15-4, 98-90 twice, 97-91 with the way the judges score that one. And Tony DeMarco, a guy that's retired more times than I take a shower, for God's sakes. But Tony DeMarco is back, and he won a unanimous decision over Luis Solis to improve to 32-6 with a draw. He scored a 10-round decision over Solis. All three judges saw it the same, 99-89. I got an email to read, and this one's from my man Mike from Michigan. Sally says, "Hey, Billy C, normally my emails are long, but this one will be short." Hey, on that note, you know, we do get a lot of emails, and I want to try to get to all of them. So if you guys could keep them a little on the short side and to the point, that would be appreciated. But anyway, he says, "Normally my emails are long, this one's short. Could Vitaly Klitschko be considered one of the greatest heavyweights of all time? I mean, meaning the top 15 or so. I got him at number 11 on my ranking and believe him to be severely underrated. As I've stated many times, Ezra Charles used to be a number one guy who was the most underrated fighter of all time. I'm changing that to Vitaly. Am I wrong? And if so, how?" He says, "Thanks much." He says, "By the way, we're going through a rough time right now. Boxing is my way of keeping a little happiness together." So I just want to just say this, Mike. Hang in there, my man. Life does dish us out some bad hands from time to time. But like a true fighter, you know, you get up off the canvas and you come back and you win by knockout. That's all I can say. As far as Vitaly Klitschko, could be very underrated. Like his brother, never ducked anyone. What's your thoughts, Sal?
No, it's exactly that. You know, I like a fighter that will take on all comers and put his fist where his mouth is, and it is what it is. We've got to see some good fights this year, and we've got to see what fighters are willing to face each other and climb the ranks and defend their titles. I mean, it's just where they're.
Well, you know, Vitaly Klitschko had a better chin than his brother.
And I remember back then, and I think Klitschko, Vitaly Klitschko was a hell of a fighter. And when his brother came up, the same thing, boom. But you think, which one had a better chin?
I think Vitaly had the better chin, and he also had a mean streak in him.
He did.
He was a little more exciting, and, you know, it is a shame that he seems forgotten almost. But both Klitschkos, I'm sure, will get into the Hall of Fame. First time they're eligible, and we'll go from there. One other thing I wanted to mention, I'm sure Dax Khan is scheduled to call in here in a minute or two, but Manny Pacquiao and Jeff Horn, this fight is supposed to be taking place in April, but some reports came out over the weekend that, according to Manny Pacquiao's team, that this fight's going to be taking place in the United Arab Nations, maybe in Dubai. And Manny Pacquiao said, well, 100% it's taking place there. And this is news to Duco Events. The main big cheese at Duco is Dean Lundgren, and he's got some comments. He says, we've been working with Top Rank over the last 3 months to have this fight in Brisbane. We're nearing completion of the deal, and as far as I'm concerned, Top Rank is the exclusive promoter of Manny Pacquiao, and until they tell me otherwise, we shall continue to try and get this deal done. We had discussions today with team of Top Rank that will continue. I like to think that if we get a deal done, it will be in the next week. I would be very surprised if any other city or state would be ready to host Manny Pacquiao against Jeff Horn in April. It's such a short span of time. You know, I find it kind of strange that that they are even talking about this fight. I mean, all we've heard about was that it was going to take place in Australia. Now, to think that it's going to be moved, to me, it seems like a bidding war. It's boiled down to money. Maybe they're trying to see, you know, how much more money they can get. But on the other side of the coin, I haven't ever heard that this fight was officially announced anyway. Joining us right now, Sal, is my man Dax Khan. Dax, was this fight ever officially announced?
You know, it was officially promoted, unofficially, I should say. You know, things were being sent out by PR people. There was actually some sort of press conferences. There was some media interviews with Horn, but, you know, actually there was never any sort of official, you know, announcement in terms of, yes, the contract is signed, it's going to take place on this date, at this venue, at this time. So I think it was one of those things that was so close to being signed that the public pressure kind of killed it a little bit. And as of last night, what I understood is that for Manny Pacquiao's next opponent, there's supposed to be some sort of fan poll on who I should fight next. That's the rumor of what's going to happen. And I believe Manny Pacquiao is the one that said, I'm going to let my fans pick who I should fight next.
Well, you know what? Sal and I were just talking. As a matter of fact, Sal brought that to my attention prior to the show today. And you know, the funny thing is that this fight was never officially announced. If they haven't even agreed upon a location yet, all they had was the date and that he was willing to fight Jeff Horn. That was the amount that led up to. But my thought would always be this, and Sal, you and I talked about this many times. This fight really doesn't make any sense for Manny Pacquiao unless they're going to give him $100 million, which they were tossing big dollars around. I mean, it makes no sense. I think that would be why he all of a sudden he's trying to say let the fans decide, because he was hoping to get a rematch with Mayweather. Let's make no mistake. I mean, Manny Pacquiao has earned that. I mean, to fight Jeff Horn starts sending him down a different street, don't you guys think?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What do you think, Sal?
I think the same thing. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, now that you both think it's absolutely. What else
absolutely.
You got? What else you got, Dax? Hey, Dax, how much snow did you get more snow last night?
I'm not overnight. I didn't. We got a lot of rain yesterday, but we got the big storm just like you. I believe, from what the weather was saying, I was going to give you a call, but the weather was so crazy here. Because according to the news, the further south you were going to get more snow. So we got about 7 inches or something on Thursday into Friday, or Friday into Saturday. Then it stopped, and then yesterday we got more snow, and then it turned into like a rain, and then now it just it's actually the sun is out right now. But either way, it's, you know, I look on my Instagram every now and then, and when I look on there, you know, or on your Facebook thing, you know, it comes up to these things called memories about these past posts, and it was actually 1 year shy of a day. On February 8th, matter of fact, that we had like a big storm. And actually on April 2nd last year, we had a pretty little decent snowing too, because I have some pictures of that. So who knows, hopefully it's over, maybe it's not. The weather just isn't the same anymore.
Well, we got, the storm that you guys got hit with the other day, we ended up with about 7-8 inches. But last night, we got another 15.
Oh, yeah, so you definitely got more than we did.
Yeah, well, I'm sick of it. As a matter of fact, Sal wants it so bad, we're shipping it all down to him.
I want it.
What else you got going, Dax?
All right, so first we'll just if you want to, real quick, we just go over Saturday's fights, as you guys were just saying. I'm not really sure what people were watching with the Rashi Warren and the Double Z fight. You know, I believe Double Z was just dazzled early on in that fight by that speed. You know, Warren dropped him twice. I thought it was going to be over quick. I'm like, wow, what just happened here? But then, you know, I think Rashi Warren was given the benefit of some of the knockdowns being called slips. But after that, you know, I'm not really sure what Larry Hazard Jr. was watching with that 115-111 score of his. I had it 114-112 in favor of Double Z. But, you know, Rashi Warren, he's a warrior. There's heart in him. Make no question that lack of power hurts him. He was getting pushed backwards. He was being bullied. And once that nose started bleeding, he was really hurt. You know, that really hurt him. As far as Terrell Gasha, his win over Luis Hernandez, you know, You hit it right on the head. I spoke about this a couple weeks ago with, I think it might have been Gervonta Davis, when I said, you know, you get a guy a title, that's not, you know, he's not a prospect no more. We're not developing him. This guy isn't ready for the top tier. No way do I see him dealing with anybody like Jorge Linares or a Mikey Garcia. You know, they have easy nights. You know, his opponent in there, no disrespect, Luis Hernandez, you know, he went in there to try and win, but he didn't belong there for a title fight. It wasn't a title fight caliber.
No doubt about that, and I just can't stand that at all. I see it really starting with Andre Berto. When Andre Berto became a title holder, that's all they kept saying. Well, he's still developing. He's a work in progress. I'm like, he's a world champion, you know, and then we all found out why they were saying that. He never developed, never got any better.
Sometimes it's code for our guy's not that good.
I think that it's blatant code for that. But
last night I was watching some fights. Some old fights. I was actually watching George Foreman's first two pro fights, which I had. I've never seen those. You know, I'd seen his Olympic fights, but I'd never seen his first two pro fights. When Foreman came in, I think it was 214 pounds. And, you know, four fights later, he fought Chuck Wepner at 213 pounds. And he was wild. He was really raw. He just swung. There was times where he was throwing those big hooks, and he actually fell one time because he was so raw. But you know something, there's a guy that never took a step back. He just took these steps ahead and increased in competition, and that's what they're not doing today. You know what? Either increasing the competition and go for the title, or you know something, keep your guys away from the title until they're ready. Don't say I'm still developing. The developing stage is over once you hit that level.
Right, well, that's the problem with so
about that.
Yeah, that's the problem with so many titles. I mean, you know, but...
And, you know, various sources, Alexander Usyk, you know, a guy who really took the cruiserweight division by storm. And, you know, he shows that he's, you know, he's an incredible boxer. He's very mobile. We're not used to seeing guys of his size with his style. You know, right now, word is that, you know, he's replaced his trainer, James Ali Bashir, and he's going to go with Vasyl Lomachenko's father, Anatoly, and that's going to be his new head trainer, official trainer. He's going to be on the same team with Vasyl Lomachenko, which I really think that, you know, considering Usyk's style and his pedigree, that, you know, and when you look at Vasyl Lomachenko, the way Vasyl, you know, dodges punches, he lets his hands go, and his type of defense, I actually believe that Anatoly would be a perfect trainer to increase his game. What are your opinions on that?
You know, I'll start off first. I agree with you, and I'm glad that he's getting a shot because, you know, the work that he's done with his son, it's going to be interesting to see if he can, you know, translate that to other fighters, you know, because obviously there's that relationship father-son, which is hard to work with in a professional boxer-trainer relationship, which they've already accomplished. But now it'll be interesting to see if he can do have the same success with someone that's not his son. It looks like he knows what he's doing, and I'm psyched. I'm glad. What do you think, Sal?
I think it's unique and it's good. And I think let's see how we can work with somebody else, like you just said, other than his son. It might be a good facet for him to develop.
Well, he's got a guy that is more of a power puncher, and
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if he can, if he can get this guy to be a little more, sweet science oriented like his son. This guy's gonna be a dangerous cruiserweight, right, Doc?
Yeah, I mean, Usyk is already a dangerous cruiserweight. His problem is that he moves around a little too much.
Well, that's what I mean.
We're not used to seeing Eastern European fighters move around like that.
No.
If we see him learning to sit down and set things up a little better, he's a dangerous out, man.
Exactly. Basil Lomachenko, we're not used to seeing Eastern European fighters like that, that are able to sit down on their punches, but yet, they're able to win their release, and then when their opponent's coming back on them, they're like a ghost. They're nowhere to be found, and by the time they turn around, they're getting their work done. So if Anatoly is able to just, get Usyk a little more composed, like he has with his son, again, like you stated, that's a very dangerous guy right there.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, our topic today, Dax, I want to ask you real quick. Roy Jones Jr., well, one of our topics, Roy Jones Jr. continues to fight. He's fighting Friday against Bobby Gunn. It's a pay-per-view. I think it's time for Roy to hang him up. I've said this a couple of years ago. But, right now, I mean, there's nothing left to prove. He's not fighting anyone that really can showcase how diminished his skills are. He's picking guys that could camouflage that to a degree, and to be honest with you, he can't be getting anything out of it except padding his record. And to be quite honest, I don't know how many people would even consider buying a fight like him against Bobby Gunn. And the saddest part of it all is that there's a generation of fans right now, Dax, that never saw Roy Jones the way we did, and they probably look at Roy Jones when we say, oh, this guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer, pound for pound top fighter of all time. They must laugh at us. What's your thoughts?
He's just another case of a guy who just refuses to go away because he wants to have that one sensational performance that is going to send him off. But then on the other side, when he has that one sensational performance, and a guy like Bobby Gunn, who could be a spoiler, but on the other side, he is also that guy who could fit that role. But then once Roy gets that sensational win, you know what? He fools himself into saying, I still got it. And that's the issue. So Roy Jones, in my opinion, somebody has to tell him, somebody has to make him, and as you stated before when these guys were speaking about commissions, that's what has to happen. The commissions have to step in and say, you know what, enough is enough, you've lost, you got knocked out against this guy, and when Roy gets knocked out, he doesn't get just stopped. Roy gets knocked out in dramatic fashion, the type of knockouts that take mental years off your life in terms of, something another 10 years from now, you're going to need assistance dressing yourself. That's the type of knockouts Roy Jones suffers.
Well, the sad part, though, is that when guys like him and Shannon Briggs, they stay busy, they fight guys that are nowhere near a contender status, and they win a couple, and next thing you know, they're catapulted into this big money title shot fight where they're basically being used as a cupcake, feeding for the champion, but yet they get their payday. My hang-up with that isn't the fact that the guy gets the payday, especially if they need it. It's the hang-up that I have is the fact that there's other fighters that are losing that opportunity, that are working themselves in that position, and they're being lost to because of a name, and it ruins, I think it ruins the integrity of the sport.
I say that all the time on here, I say it all the time, even with guys that are top level. I said it about Mikey Garcia a few weeks ago, who's an elite fighter, but you know what, you're gone for 2 years, you fight a second-rate opponent, and then all of a sudden you get a world title shot. That's just unacceptable, and that's a problem with the sport because it's not fair to the other guys. So, that's something with the sport that, over the weekend I had a debate with somebody, and a lot of people felt the same way, where they're saying, Bob Arum or somebody from over a top rank, they said, you know, Shakur Stevenson is going to be the next Sugar Ray Leonard. You know, there's only one Sugar Ray Leonard, and the problem is, you say it all the time, promoters don't promote, and you know what? It's a whole lot easier to try and take a fighter that you have and try and model his image after somebody who's already a big, who was already a big name, and sit there and just use that Oscar De La Hoya, as Oscar would say, the blueprint to turn him into a superstar instead of, you know what, building a new superstar. You know, and you blame that on the promoters. You can't blame it on the fighters.
100%.
100%. Last two things. Adrian Broner, 147 pounds. You know, people from my Manhattan's team told me that when they seen him on Friday, how big he was. I couldn't believe it. And then all of a sudden it comes out that, you know, he's not going to make this weight. And now he's going to fight with Granados at 147. The UFC, they may never come back to New York after Saturday.
What happened?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know if you watched the fight, you know, they have a school for their referees called Command, which is run by their head referee, who's a great referee, Big John McCarthy. But, you know, this Command school, what the problem with that is, you know, they don't, the referees don't have this experience where they work themselves up into these positions. And in the Holly Holm fight, you know, Todd Anderson, you know, he allowed so many blows that were after the bell, and he allowed a lot of things to go on in there that he should have been right on. He should have been on top of it. Now, Dana White wanted to blame New York for allowing this to happen, but you know something, Dana, you know, this is your company, and, you know, you're the one who said, okay, this guy is going to be the ref, and, you know, I'm going to allow this guy to ref this fight, a fight of that magnitude. So, you know, it's just a case of, you know, one, a bad referee, and number two, you know, looking for somebody to point that off on instead of just sitting there and saying, you know what, we messed up. I don't know, maybe that's something you could speak to with Larry about, you know, how do you just have a school, you know, it's almost like a defensive driving course or something like that. You go there, you learn a few, you get some manuals, and even some of the referees have said themselves, they get a manual, they learn how to ref in some practice classes during the thing, then it's baptism under fire, you know. How is this safe for any of these guys that are in the ring? You know, this is how guys get hurt and get killed.
Well, the state of New York, their commission appoints the referees and the judges, so I don't know how anybody can complain about that, you know. So
this is and last thing is, you know, we speak about people and egos, you know. Canelo's recent claim drive me nuts, and you know, some maybe people can email, you can say, you know, his comments recently, one about the $15 million offer to Triple G that I don't believe that ever happened, and neither does anybody else, you know, and of course, this has just been going on and drawn out. But Canelo's comments of, you know, he comes out and he goes, he's an opponent that's more than an opponent deserves. As an opponent for me, you should take the money you're offered. All of a sudden now, the lineal middleweight champion is an opponent for you. And Canelo continues to make these claims, and he's getting really old with this. And, you know, there was another rumor I heard from somebody that, you know, his team wouldn't translate it because Canelo really, you know, has gotten really cocky and arrogant. And there was a comment, you know, where he had said, you know, down to some Mexican media about, we made this mistake in the Mayweather fight. Look how it turned out for us. We're not going to make this mistake again. Either he takes what he's offered or he doesn't get the fight. How did you make a mistake in the Mayweather fight, Canelo? You were the opponent in there. Mayweather allowed you to have a fight.
Well, right. You know what?
That's right.
Canelo effed up because Triple G doesn't need Canelo. Canelo needs Triple G. Canelo has everything I loved about Canelo, he's failed me on. You know, and the truth of the matter is Triple G has moved on. Thank God Daniel Jacobs has got the balls to step in the ring with Triple G, and that is the fight that everyone's looking for in the middleweight division. Saul Canelo Alvarez has just, you know, become a circus act. You know, he skips over the middleweight division per se because he was having those catch weights. Now he's fighting Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. at super middleweight. I mean, give me a break. I mean, it's so obvious that he doesn't want to fight Triple G. And he's trying to marinate it like Floyd did with Manny. And we'll probably get that fight when Triple G is 40 years old, you know. So, yeah, I say if I'm Triple G, I say screw you, Canelo. I would never give him the fight. Forget it.
Yeah, exactly. But everybody's an opponent. You know, everybody now, he refers to them as an opponent. Not my opponent. Not the opponent I'm going to be facing, but an opponent. which is basically an insult to every guy that he's
Well, that's because he's.
You know?
That's because they're trying.
Arrogance and cockiness that Oscar De La Hoya has fed him. You know, this is aggravating. And then when the comment that I heard, he said, with Mayweather, about you made the mistake with Floyd Mayweather. First of all, you were the opponent. What you should be saying to yourself is, Mayweather made the mistake because 20 years from now, people are going to look at the record on paper and see that fight was close when it was not close at all. And if you wanted to man up Canelo, what you should do is you should come out and publicly apologize for the scores that Levi Martinez, Dave Moretti handed out for that Lara fight, because you know something, you lost that fight too, and your head is just, the guy needs to check for something.
No, what the problem is they are trying to make him the big name in sport. That's what they're telling everyone, that he's the biggest name in the sport. And, he's trying to use verbiage that would back that claim up. And we all know that he has slid way off. Nobody gives a shit about Canelo Alvarez anymore. They really don't. But, anyway.
It's craziness. So, it'd be an interesting week next week, definitely, for sure.
All right, Dax. We'll talk to you soon, brother.
Take care, Dax.
All right, everybody. Enjoy your day.
Thanks, you too, pal.
Dax Khan giving us some interesting stuff.
Yes, sir.
One thing I want to ask you about, something that Dax did bring up, Sal.
Yeah.
Adrian Broner. Originally, the contract with Adrian Granados that he's fighting this weekend, Granados, was at 142. Now they're making the fight at 147, and Adrian Broner basically is like, hey, you don't want to go to 147? Don't take the fight. And they basically, forced him into taking that weight. I look at it two different ways. One is, if he really cared about the weight, and I'm talking about Granados, he could have said screw you and not make the fight, because then Adrian Broner would have had to do something, either throw him some more money, whatever the case is. But the second part of my question to you is simple. This to me shows that maybe Adrian Broner isn't in the best shape, or he's having trouble making weight, and his dedication is in question. I know this is one of your pet peeves with fighters not making weight and not being disciplined to make the weight. What's your thoughts on this latest with Broner?
So I understand these guys originally signed a contract for a specific weight, a lighter weight. And now Broner, halfway through the training cycle or whatever, has a contract he wants to adhere to that's different from the original contract and asks for a higher weight.
Halfway through, the fight is Friday.
I know. I'm using that now. How the hell? See, this, you got it. It's a pet peeve. You guys sign a contract not a week before a fight, not 2 weeks before a fight, several weeks before a fight. And you have the contract signed, sealed. Guess what, chumps? It's time for you to deliver, predicated on the weight you originally agreed to. And if you can't tear the pounds off, do like we all did. We dry out. We don't drink for 24 hours, 36 hours. We watch, we wring it out. We run with rubber suits. We do this, do that. We get the weight off. And you know what? If you're listless and you can't get in the ring that night, well, then you get your ass beat. Otherwise, you know what? You signed the contract except for the original weight. That's the weight you should go enter the ring at. Not enter the ring at, but step on a scale and have it read. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you know what?
it's ridiculous, Billy. These guys are professionals. They're getting paid some big bucks to do what is expected of them. It's not a conditional. Well, okay, I'll sign. We'll do this. You know what? I had a little trouble dropping those pounds. Maybe I feel stronger this way. Maybe let's change it up here. Let's sign this addendum to the contract and let's make it about 5 pounds heavier, 6 pounds heavier. Get the hell out of here. You know what? You sign a contract, you adhere to it, you fight it, and you deliver it.
That's the problem with all professional sports these days, you know?
I know. They're prima donnas.
They're babies. I don't know. You got catch. Boxing, we got catch weights, so weight classes aren't even. First of all, we have.
What did I say?
Well, first of all,
I've never heard of the catch weight when I made my comeback.
First of all, we had originally eight weight classes.
I'm either going to come and make a comeback at welterweight, junior welterweight, or junior middleweight. That, you know, oh, Sal, we're going to have a catch weight of 156. What the hell's a catch weight?
Listen, we originally had 8 weight classes. We went to 17. We went to 17. So now 17 weight classes. And then all of a sudden,
still want in, more in between with the catch weight.
In the last decade, we've had more catch weight fights than anything else. So
it's pathetic.
And then sprinkle in the fact that there's a gazillion titles out there. I mean, and you got guys.
What's wrong with the state of boxing?
No, We just said it.
How sick is that? You gotta have you know, you had the original 8 weight classes. Well, guess what? You know what? We decide, are we going to fight heavier or are we going to fight lighter? We're going to step on a scale, and we're going to be a certain weight. Ah, well, let's now invent the 14 weight classes or 15 weight classes. All right, that gives us a little more room. Do I want to be a junior welterweight, or welterweight, or middleweight, or lightweight, or super lightweight? I mean, you guys have friggin' weight classes every 4, 5, 6 pounds. So, how easy do you want it?
Come on,
catch your ass in a gym and get to the weight you should be.
You should go. You could go into a bathroom and take a healthy shit and change your weight class. You know, I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Hey, it's just pathetic. I don't understand it.
Quick question to everybody out there: this weekend we're talking about Adrian Broner against Adrian Granados. That's the main event on Showtime on Saturday night. Is this fight worthy of a post-fight show? I ask you that because, you know, I'm thinking it's not. But like we've promised to do post-fight shows after every major event. I mean, Lamont Peterson is taking on David Avanesyan for the welterweight title, the WBA's version of the regular welterweight title. Is this an event that you'd want to see a post-fight show? Drop me an email, Billy@TalkinBoxing, TalkinBoxing.com. Should we have a post-fight after the Adrian Broner fight this weekend? Let me know. I need you guys to help me decide, and we'll make a decision for Wednesday's show. So drop me an email. Should we have a post-fight show after Adrian Broner and Adrian Granados fight scheduled for this weekend? Hey, on this day, February 13th, in 1993, James Toney knocks out Iran the Blade Barkley in the 9th round to win the IBF World Super Middleweight title, and it took place in Vegas. On this day in 1983, one of my favorite fighters, Donald Curry, wins a 15-round decision over Jun-Sok Hwang to win the vacant WBA World Welterweight title. It took place in Texas. On this day in 1994, Jake Rodriguez wins a 12-round decision over Charles Murray to win the IBF World Junior Welterweight title. It took place in Atlantic City, New Jersey. On this day in 1987, Fidel Bassa wins a 15-round decision over Hilario Zapata to win the WBA World Flyweight title. Finally, on this day in 1917, Fireman Jim Flynn knocks out future heavyweight champion and boxing Hall of Famer Jack Dempsey in less than 30 seconds into the first round. Fireman Jim Flynn improves to 37 wins, 18 losses, and 15 draws in their heavyweight fight that took place in Utah. Now, the Manessa Mauler, who would turn around and become one of the most feared fighters in heavyweight history, he drops to 23-2 with 5 knockouts. After this loss to Fireman Jim Flynn, my man Jack Dempsey went back and reinvented his career, revisited his career, and came back as most people remember him, as virtually unbeatable. Any final thoughts from you, Sal Rocky Senicola?
I'm going to see if I can have a catch weight myself. I got to catch a diet.
I got to catch a diet myself. The
food we consume this weekend, I'll tell you. I just want to I want to talk to you about a couple things that we have coming up, and I am making some progress with some things. I'll have some, hopefully, answers this week or so about the August situation, and we'll see what happens.
That sounds good. We got to decide whether a post-fight show is in order, and before we give everyone our thoughts, Sal, which we'll do on Wednesday, we're looking to get your thoughts. Should we have this post-fight show after Adrian Broner. I mean, I was a big fan of Adrian Broner at one time. I don't know how competitive this fight's going to be. Maybe we focus on the co-main. I don't know. But drop me an email with your thoughts. Billy at Talkin Boxing. TalkinBoxing.com. We're in that part of the sports world right now. If you're not much of a hockey fan or a hoops fan, we're waiting for pitches and catches, which a lot of the teams are reporting this week. So baseball season is just around the corner, and so is spring, hopefully. So, Sal, I look forward to Wednesday's show, and we'll leave everybody with this. Make sure you tune in Wednesday morning. Same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, ciao, baby. Da na 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 na